With that, be happy to answer your questions or take your questions. Yes, ma'am. The work in progress. We've got a listing session for the overall conference on Friday morning, which I will lead the group. We're continuing to have small group meetings and individual meetings throughout this time frame. House will be out of session next week on district work period. And then when we get back, we'll start a real physical whipping count at that point in time. In the meantime, we're making the rounds with individuals to see where the push might be. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, a decent amount of Democratic criticism of the nutrition title at the markup last week. One of the pieces of criticism levied was that if this is the Republican plan to produce this kind of nutrition title, why was it not discussed at the litany of hearings that were held in advance? So I'll ask you that same question. Why not discuss what ultimately became the nutrition title in the Smart Bill at the 20-some-odd hearings that we had in the last few years?
Well, all those hearings gathered various pieces of the information with respect to what SNAP did and didn't do, and what we gleaned from that were the solutions moving forward. So you're right, we didn't talk about the specific solutions in any of those hearings, but all of those hearings helped inform us about what we wanted to do and moving forward. So that's a process question. We can argue that all day long if you'd like with my Democrat colleagues, but that doesn't move the ball forward. We've got the language out there right now. Ranking Member Peterson had the specific language February the 7th. We shared with him the concepts back in October, and so that argument that somehow with the 21 hearings that we had didn't cover these the subject matter is inaccurate. It informed what we did, and I'm more anxious, quite frankly, to talk about the plans that are on the table right now moving forward, which will be one of the things that we bring to the floor. Sure. We followed the same plan that my understanding had been followed by Lucas on the 14 Farm Bill and by then Chairman Peterson and the 08 Farm Bill, is that the chairman ranking member worked the language over, and then when they can agree on that language, then they began to share that with everybody else. He was certainly I thought he would share the concepts with his team, get them prepared for what we were doing, share the broader strokes of what we were going to take up. And you'll need to ask him about why he didn't do that. But I believed at the time I was following the same protocol that we would followed throughout the other previous farm bills that I was aware of. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, you also suggested that perhaps their plan now, not to even offer any amendments when it's coming to the House, seemed to be rolling the dice for what the Senate would roll and then try to deal with this in Congress.
I didn't hear a question. Well, first step is to get it out of the chamber with as strong a language as we can, with as big a vote as we can possibly get, which will then help us. I've got great confidence that my good colleague, Pat Roberts, will get some form of the farm bill done on the Senate side. And then, as with every big piece of legislation, you start that conference process to try to meld the two bills together. And we will work as hard as I can to preserve as much of the bill as I've got. I'm not arrogant enough or naive enough to think that what came out of committee last week will be what goes to the president's desk. It could be made better, and we'll work with our Senate colleagues to see what we can get passed.
The chairman said he would be willing to look at efficiency, he would be willing to look at transparency, and he would be willing to look at areas of fraud.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if the themes that you're talking about here fit into any of those categories from the chairman.
Yeah. Okay. I still didn't hear a question. Yeah. No, I understand you want me to get after Pat and all this kind of good stuff. I'm not going to do that. I've got to get this bill across the House floor. That's my main mission between now and in May. And then, whatever the Senate puts on the table, we'll go at it. But I'm not going to pre-negotiate with the Senate before they actually put something up. Yes, ma'am. You'll need to move closer, ma'am. I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
As reported in Agriculture yesterday, you had activists deliver empty blanks to your office in response to the SNAP encouragement program. What was your reaction to that?
Well, good citizens making their voices heard, or in this instance, their plates heard. Some of the plates were, simply slogans and things like that. That's fine. Some of them shared stories that about disabled being kicked off of SNAP or elderly being kicked off of SNAP, and those are inaccurate. We'd like to have those conversations with anybody who would point out to me in the bill where we do that to folks. But it was an exercise in free speech, exercise in confronting government, and I certainly appreciate them coming to the office and sharing that with us. They're very orderly, very polite. We were polite back, and that's kind of the way our civil discourse ought to go, I would hope, is you can have those honest differences of opinion. And then in those instances where I believe they were inaccurate, I hope to have conversations with folks to show them that that's not what what they've been told the bill does is not what the bill actually does. Yes, ma'am. Well, I couldn't get the other side to engage. They took themselves to the sidelines back in March. I'd hoped to have the vote in the committee in March, maybe late February. I assume that that my colleague was negotiating good faith on the SNAP issues, that was what was left. I could not get them, have yet to be able to get them, to explain to me just specifically what they don't like or what they would improve in the Farm Bill. So I brought it forward. The comment about it could be made, better. There's not a perfect bill ever passed out of the House of Representatives or the Senate or signed by the President that somebody could, maybe a post office naming, get everything spelled right. But everything we do in life could be made better. We strive to get it as absolutely good as we can get it. But I'm always open to the idea that I may have missed something here or there. Don't have anything to give you specifically. But I'm just letting you know that I'm open to having those conversations, that if there's an area of the bill that can be improved and we agree on that, then we'll put it in. Ma'am? In what regard? Well, when somebody tells you, I grew up in a family where when my mama told me no, I took her at her word. I do otherwise was at my own peril. And so when the other side told me no, that it's non-negotiable, then I was like, okay, I'll take them at their word. So, no, it wasn't a matter of time. It was just a matter of those guys wouldn't come to the table. They chose last Wednesday to criticize the bill for some 5 hours. But my recollection is not one amendment offered, not one area, not even an amendment to strip it out, start over. They care so little about about engaging in the legislative process. They just wanted to come in and yap and complain. We listened to it politely. They got all the time they needed to speak their piece. They had plenty of time to offer amendments, and my colleagues chose not to. You'll have to explain to them why. Get them to explain why.
Follow up to that. If amendments were to be made, could the Farm Bill have still gotten out of the House in time? If they do make amendments, could we still get something
passed on the House side? Well, it depends on what the amendment is. So you have an open amendment process in the committee. There's no way I could stop any amendment from coming to be considered by the committee. We considered a couple of them. Both of those passed on the voice vote, moved it forward. But my Democrat colleagues chose to not offer anything up. Yes, sir. Okay. Well, time is of the essence to get this done. Bob Goodlatte's got a bill that I've worked with him extensively on that would address an ag worker program that would make some sense. Does some other things as well, deals with DACA, deals with the border wall authorization, deals with chain migration, visa lottery program, and E-Verify. But it's the right bill to go at those narrow pieces of it. And the quicker we can get the 218 on the House side, the better. Get the Senate, pressure them to take it up to move it forward. I'm not clear that everybody in the conversation actually wants to get to an answer, gets to a deal. But clearly I do, and the folks that I represent, all those producers out there who need, whether it's a dairyman who needs somebody every single day or, as you mentioned, planting and harvesting, we need those folks to get that done, and the quicker we can put a plan in place to make that happen, the better.
Why don't they want to get there?
You'll have to ask them that. But their actions say, we just like to keep the fomenting the waters and keep, you know, keep stirring this up, and don't really want to get to a yes. I do, and that's why I'm working with Goodlatte on his bill to get as good an ag worker program, one that makes sense, one that can actually be implemented with some common sense about it, not make it so difficult to transition from where we are now to where we want to get to, that we jam the system up. And Bob's been great to work with on that. Former chairman of House Ag, obviously great depth in the system. He's got poultry processors that need people every single day as well. So the need is there. Clearly, after all this lengthy period of time of high unemployment, Americans don't want those jobs in particular. And so it's now time to deal with an ag worker plan that allows our producers to continue to do what they do best. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So the absolutely long-term plan would be to gain additional access to markets around the world, eliminate those tariffs and barriers that we may currently face to sell our products. My voice to the White House has been consistently is, get this done as quickly as you can, because there are real-world impacts happening today. Sorghum prices are down. I've got the beverage manufacturer, our beverage guys were in my office yesterday. The aluminum prices dropped. I mean, so there are things folks are having to cope with right now because of the uncertainty and the turmoil while this negotiation is going on. And the voice is, it's your job to get this done. Don't screw it up. But the quicker you get it done, the better. So I'm confident that this president will get us better trade deals. I'm also pretty confident that he understands that everyday Americans are having to cope with the realities of how much turmoil is in the system right now as a result of this negotiation thing going on. And so we're going to get it done. With respect to Sonny Perdue's use of the tools that were given to him in the omnibus bill, I've got confidence that he will use those appropriately. He's gathering that data right now on a commodity-by-commodity basis to see where it is, see what can be done out of that. And I look forward to working with him and seeing how to use those resources if it's appropriate in this midterm. Farm bill is not anywhere near nimble enough to make that happen, quite frankly. We do have a provision in the bill where we take the Farm Market Development Program and the Market Access Program, put them together to create enough oomph, enough spending to create baseline going into the future. I would have liked to have increased those both of those programs, but the best I could do with the resources I had was to work it so that I've got baseline. If we get this one done, then we'll have baseline for those programs in the future, and we won't have to scramble around to try to fund them. And maybe at that point in time, we can increase that funding. But that's about the best we could do on the Farm Bill piece, because we're not very nimble. Sonny Perdue will be nimble in addressing those stresses and strains within production agriculture that are created by this turmoil that's going on. I couldn't hear you, man.
Is there enough employees at USDA to implement
a farm bill? Yes. The non-SNAP titles are relatively straightforward, more evolutionary than revolutionary. The base issues are there, so I don't think it would be a big deal this time. On the SNAP side, the emphasis there will be on states coming up with their particular plans on how to use the money that will be available to address their work capable populations that are currently unemployed or underemployed. And so I have not had Sonny raise that issue with me. They've gone through the bill with us on a technical side to make sure that it can be implemented, and that issue has not come up. Yes, sir.
Have there been any numbers run to figure out relevant to SNAP, with essentially full employment at this point, any sort of maybe changes that could be made in terms of the amounts or anything like that? It just seems that with almost full employment, there would be less of a need.
Yeah. Well, SNAP participation has dropped. You saw, I think, 500,000 came off in January. Some of that might have been as a result of the disaster and coming off, but those numbers are, in fact, coming down. The population, target population of work capable 18 to 59-year-olds that are not a caregiver of a six-year-old or younger is about 12 million people, and U.S. white. And the last number I saw was about 6.2 million jobs that are unfilled. So those are 12 million lives, 12 million families that could be better off as a result of what we're trying to get done with this SNAP. Whether, you know, how we're going to incentivize them to actually get in that deal is something else. But this plan moves forward to allow states to, which quite frankly are the best ones to identify how to bridge that gap between the jobs and the skills that are out there versus their work capable population and the skills they have or don't have. How do you bridge that gap? And state by state is a much better solution to that problem. Well, in the SNAP requirements, yeah.
Okay. And so how is this different?
There was this subset called able-bodied adults without dependents, ABODs. And they had some special rules associated with them. We've eliminated that special category, just said anybody 18 to 59 that is not a caregiver of a six-year-old, is not physically, mentally disabled, is going to be subject, and they want to participate in SNAP. Then here's the parameters of how you participate in the SNAP. One, you got to make below 130%. Two, you got to meet the asset test. And then if you're in that category and if SNAP is valuable enough to you that you want to participate, then it's 20-hour work week, or participate in one of these to-be-formulated state-based plans using existing job training. We're not creating any new job training stuff. It's just all those that are out there. Then we're going to help you. We're going to give you that hand up that we hope works to get folks up and off the off these programs. It is very similar to what was done with Clinton's approval in 1996. I've had other Democrat colleagues tell me that it's similar to the legislation that went through in California a number of years back. And so why I got confused last Wednesday because I would hear my colleagues gratuitously say that they believe in work, they believe in the dignity of work, they believe in what we're, that, yep, yep, but they don't want to do what we're doing. And so my exact response, I didn't say anything that day because they were on such a roll, didn't want to interrupt them. But that it looks to me from West Texas like they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. You can't brag on work, you can't brag on the dignity and the impact it has, the positive impact it has, and then turn around and say, yeah, but I don't like what Conaway's doing. And not tell me specifically what you don't like about what we're doing. So anyway, frustrated. But looking forward to having those conversations. If they will come to the table with legitimate ideas that'll move this forward, I'm all for it. Yes, ma'am. Sure. So the backdrop is a 50% drop in net farm income the last 5 years, the worst since the Depression. So the scene behind what we're trying to get done is dramatically different than what was happening in 2014 when many of those amendments were made. I'm hoping that people will look at what's going on in farm country, the impact that this problem's had. Bankruptcies are up. We've got two sets of farms that University of Missouri and University of A&M used to kind of give us the canary in the coal mine. A significant number of those are in trouble right now. So the reason for having a safety net is clearly there this time that we shouldn't have to argue. So I'm hoping there'll be some self-limiting issues. The other thing is I've asked Pete Sessions that if someone is going to be a no on final, no matter what, that person shouldn't get a poison pill amendment. They shouldn't be able to make the bill harder to pass by whatever they're doing, because they're a no. Now, if they're a yes, and they can get to a yes, then we'll have to have those conversations. So I'm not looking at a closed rule. I couldn't get 218 Republicans to agree with me on that. So there will be amendments. I'm not going to negotiate myself and suggest what those might be. But we will work really hard to fight them all off, as we've done in the past, to make sure that the safety net non-SNAP portion stays where it's at. If there are positive amendments on the SNAP side that people want to put in and can make the deal better, we'll get at that. As to what my Democrat colleagues might or might not do on the floor, probably to be determined. I'm hopeful that this next week, when they're back home and people actually read the bill, their constituents, who 70% of Democrat voters believe that work requirements are a really good idea, 90% of Republicans think that, about of a blend of 80% of Americans believe that work requirements is an appropriate requirement with respect to the SNAP, that when they start listening to those folks and actually try to find in the bill all the negative things that they said last week was going to happen, because it's not there, that they may come around and say, you know, this is an opportunity to help a bunch of lives out there, help people replicate that story that we heard with the young woman at one of our listening sessions, who, very brave young woman, quite frankly, stood in front of a microphone and said, I'm the reason SNAP should stay in place. She said, I was an 18-year-old mother of a 3-year-old, single mom, and I didn't like my future, and I wanted to go to college. I wanted to make my life better. And SNAP and these other programs we had helped her with her sweat equity, her hard work. She got an undergraduate degree, became a teacher. She now has a master's degree as an administrator. And so for her and her daughter, public assistance is defined by what they do for other people, not what's being done for us. That's the success story that we want to drive SNAP to. That's where how we want to evaluate these things with SNAP, or lives that are changed, lives that are better than what they would otherwise been throughout this process. Again, children, folks over 60, mentally, physically disabled, those aren't who we're talking about. That's 65% of SNAP. We're going to help them. That's just who we are as Americans. But that 35% that are work capable and don't meet these other requirements, they're the ones that we want to try to change, positively change their lives by assisting them with additional training.
We have time for one more question.
Yes, sir.
With Democratic members of the committee saying that the bill is unfixable the way it is, what is your degree of confidence that you're going to come up with something that will be palatable to the Senate?
To be determined, Tom. My job is to get something that's palatable to 218 votes on the House floor. You know, when that vote's called, those red and green lights are going to go up behind the speaker, and they're going to go red or green. Not red Republican, green Republican, red Democrat, green Democrat. They're going to be red and green. The green votes will say, I stand with rural America. I stand with all those folks out there who've suffered through this 50% drop in net farm income the last 5 years. I'm going to put an assurance in place that they will know over the next 5 years what their safety net looks like, what their bankers can count on, what their creditors can work with. I'm going to, those red light, green lights will stand with all those SNAP recipients out there whose lives will be better if we get this process in place. The red votes, they'll say, no, I don't stand with rural America. I don't agree with that, and it's not, I'm not going to do it. I don't care if the Republican or Democrat. I just care if it's red and green. And I got to find 218 green votes first. Then I'll trust my good colleague Pat Roberts, who's up next, to get something across the Senate that we'll go to conference on. But again, I can't negotiate with the Senate at this point in time because I don't have anything to negotiate with. I've got to get it out of the House floor, and that's what I'm focused on to make happen. Anyone else? Well, read the bill. It's out there. And if you've got a criticism, find it in the bill and show that to me, as opposed to letting folks get you guys asking people. Your response is, hey, I don't like what Conaway's done. It does X, Y, or Z. It's incumbent on you to say, well, just where in the bill does that happen? And then we'll have something to talk about. Thanks, everybody. Look forward to it. Bye.